put things on.
And we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
And as Chris Cuomo tweeted, did anything happen this week?
That's so old and so stale. It's so lazy.
He's on vacation. All right.
Yeah, so.
In the news, President Biden has made more LGBTQ appointments to the federal courts, to the diplomatic corps, and to federal agencies.
But someone who lost his job this week was Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York. And in doing so, he has taken down a couple of LGBT leaders with him.
Well, one down, one in abeyance. At a Brooklyn grade school, fifth graders made a multicultural mural quoting lesbian poet Audre Lorde, and it was destroyed by school officials, and that sparked quite an uproar.
And at the other end of the social spectrum, Vogue magazine is featuring a transgender model on the cover for the first time.
The LGBTQ history of Colonial Williamsburg is being uncovered, and we'll have another history note this week.
And also Sweden and Finland. It's going crazy all over the place. At the Olympics, we're finally winding up the Olympics. Team LGBTQ, as they like to call them, has won 32 medals, which puts them in 11th place of all the countries.
That's great. There's a warning out about counterfeit HIV drugs being sold at U.S. pharmacies. It's very disturbing, and I don't quite know how they're going to get a handle on all of it.
Well, that's a depressing headline. And the Delta variant of the COVID virus has put the U.S. Conference on HIV and AIDS this year back online instead of in person.
And today, August 11th, is the 40th anniversary of the first gay meeting about what we would come to know as AIDS. And I'll talk a little bit about what I learned by looking back in my files about that.
Okay. Yes, Andy is going through his files. It's a multi-year project, but uncovering all sorts of things, I'm sure.
Shocking.
So we will all be the beneficiaries of that as that excavation continues.
So President Biden nominated Vermont Supreme Court Justice Beth Robinson, 56 years old, to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. She led the marriage equality movement in Vermont. She was co-counsel on Baker v. Vermont in 1999 that led to civil unions and the marriage law 10 years later. She went to Dartmouth and Chicago Law School graduate, 17 years as a civil litigator, 10 years as associate justice in Vermont's high court, would be the first out LGBTQ woman on a federal appeals court.
Which is a big deal. I was actually surprised to hear that she was the first at that level, but I'll take it. And he also has nominated lesbian Charlotte Sweeney, an employment attorney, to the U.S. District Court in Colorado. She is also the treasurer of the Matthew Shepard Foundation. Now, that's the basic level of federal courts. Beth Robinson, as a Court of Appeals justice, would be a higher level, but nonetheless, Charlotte Sweeney would join the federal court system.
Biden is finally getting around to nominating ambassadors. He picked Scott Miller, 41 years old, a gay activist, to be the U.S. ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein. They go together. He's a former vice president at UBS Wealth Management. He and his husband, Tim Gill, are prominent philanthropists, donated $3.6 million to Democratic candidates and causes since 2010, including $365,000 to Biden's general election fundraising.
Biden has announced that he wants to nominate, have no more than one third of his ambassadors be rich donors.
You got to give me a third.
Couldn't they find something else for them to do? I don't know. But anyway, this guy is headed for Switzerland. Nice work if you can get it. And Biden is also reappointing Todd Harper to be chair of the National Credit Union Administration. This will be his first full term as head of the National Credit Union Administration. He's been there, what, on a temporary basis, I guess, up until now? Yeah.
Yes.
So those are four good solid appointments.
And he's a solid guy. He worked on these issues in Congress as a staffer. So, you know, he's for real. He didn't make donations. Maybe he did. I don't know. But it didn't matter. And before we move on to a lot of other news, I want to pay tribute to Richard Trumka, 72, the president of the AFL-CIO. Died of a heart attack at the age of 72. A great labor leader and a great ally to our movement. Even if some of our movement groups don't always reciprocate to labor. At a DNC, Democratic National Committee, pride speech in 2016, he said, people asked what's left after same-sex marriage back then. He said, my answer is everything. Stand up for trans rights, LGBTQ employment rights, protection from violence. He said, Trump loves himself and hates all of us. Now, this is before Trump got elected. He started as a coal miner in Pennsylvania. While he attended Penn State and Villanova Law School and became president of the United Mine Workers at 33 and became an anti-apartheid activist and in solidarity with Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Yes, a big loss and too soon, as with so many people we talk about these days. But not too soon is Andrew Cuomo losing his job as governor of New York. Personally, I wish he'd never been the governor.
Sure.
But that's me.
So he gives his speech yesterday. He goes out trying to talk about his achievements and talks a lot about LGBTQ.
His soon-to-be replacement, Kathy Hochul, the current lieutenant governor, was asked about Cuomo as a leader and administrator and her relationship with him in a press conference she just had. She said, well, as you know, I didn't have a good relationship with him. She hasn't spoken with him since February. She's the lieutenant governor.
She said,
the one thing you can count on with me is whenever I do leave this office, no one will say that mine was a toxic atmosphere in the office.
Hear, hear. But the governor left behind a lot of toxicity. And it's ensnaring some of the people who work for him and with him. His former chief counsel, Alfonso David, there they are together at the Human Rights Campaign, who is now the president of the Human Rights Campaign, is, you know, alleged to have played a role in helping with a letter supporting Cuomo when the accusations against him first came out in December. And he also gave a file on one of the accusers to other staffers. He said he had to do this under the law as a former legal counsel, and it was leaked to the press. So this has caused an uproar everywhere, but also mainly on the Human Rights Campaign Fund staff. He had a conference call with all the staffers, and many were saying, when are you going to resign? Because they don't want this toxicity to extend to the Human Rights Campaign.
And the Human Rights Campaign Board has now hired a law firm with whom they are quite chummy, by the way.
And so how is that an independent inquiry if they
exactly
already looked at them?
Sidley Austin to investigate. Now, to be fair, Alfonso's story is this. Now, again, if I were Alfonso, I never would have worked for Cuomo, but that's a whole other story. His story is that he, as chief counsel to Cuomo, was involved in various investigations and staff stuff when he worked there, one of which was a case involving Lindsay Boylan, one of the accusers of Cuomo, and that because it was the one he did the most with, he took the file home. Now, that's a problem in the first place. So when he was asked to produce the file, he turned it over, as I would suggest he had to. It wasn't that he was trying to leak it or undermine it. The staff then leaked it to the press.
And he said, look, he said, I have done nothing wrong. But of course, that's what.
Well, I haven't finished the full defense yet. So then they propose writing this letter and having a lot of people sign on defending Cuomo against Lindsay Boylan's charges of sexual improprieties. And they ask Alfonso to look it over and to sign on. And his story is that he refused to sign it, told them they should not be writing something that demeaned her. And but then the staff claims that he said he would get others to sign it and he would sign it if they needed him to.
He denies that.
And he did call on Cuomo to resign when the attorney general's report came out.
My question for Alfonso, and you're welcome on the show. You came on when you worked for the Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund years ago. You came on the show. My question for him would be, all right, you say you never saw any of this or knew about this sexual harassment. I mean, I don't know what planet we're on, but I mean, did you not witness the bullying? Were you not bullied yourself by him? Because that's Andrew Cuomo's MO. He's a bully.
Well, and Alfonso left to go run HRC. So one might think that not wanting to be around the governor might have something to do with it. Otherwise, why would you not hang in with someone who's been
he was with him for 8 years. All right. But they've got a 30-day and up to a 30-day investigation. But, we'll let that play out.
Let's just say that Alfonso is in hot water at the Human Rights Campaign because of this history. And I agree with you. Cuomo is a monster, and I don't think anyone should have hung in with him. I don't think he should have been elected. I don't think people should have voted for him. I don't think any of that. And I think all the people who were saying he was a hero during the epidemic are completely wrong. And people who give him credit for gay stuff are only very mildly correct. He gets much more credit than he deserves. And
I've known him since he was 19 years old, and he's 63 now. And he was a problem from the beginning.
Well, there you go. But the other person caught up in this is Robbie Kaplan, who we know as a great heroine for representing Edie Windsor in her challenge to the Defense of Marriage Act and winning that case at the Supreme Court. So she went on to help create Time's Up, the organization that fights sexual harassment of women and men, and has been the chair of the board of Time's Up. But she was called in to consult on this letter that was being written to undermine Lindsay Boylan. She is the lawyer for Melissa DeRosa, who has been Cuomo's chief aide for many years and who walked out the door about two steps ahead of him. And so Robbie has now had to quit as chair of the board of Time's Up.
Right. And she's also the lawyer for E. Jean Carroll, who Trump allegedly raped years ago. And then Trump lied about it, said he didn't even know her. So she's suing him for defamation with Robbie Kaplan as a lawyer. And Jean Carroll says, Robbie Kaplan is still my lawyer.
And the best lawyer. And Robbie says that when she was shown the letter about Lindsay Boylan, she told the Cuomo people you shouldn't shame an accuser, and she objected to parts of the letter. But she also, in the end, said if you take that stuff out, the letter is okay. Hillary Rosen is defending both Alfonso and Robbie and saying they simply gave good advice and stayed away from these issues and should not be condemned.
And who are the Republicans to condemn Andrew Cuomo? I mean, Chuck Grassley wanting read into the record of the Judiciary Committee Cuomo stuff, along with Alfonso's testimony to highlight, hey, this is a bad guy who, you know, is trying to push this Equality Act. Well, I mean, they never condemned Trump, not just for sexual harassment, but for anything like trying to overturn the government.
or Matt Gaetz or any number of other Republicans caught up in various scandals. I like the response by Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel, out lesbian, who says simply, I'm just not taking any more money or support from HRC.
Okay. Can we move on?
We can.
Well,
I hope we can all move on from all of this.
Speaking of the Equality Act, you had 250 Catholic theologians calling for an end to discrimination against LGBTQ people, including some prominent ones like Sister Helen Prejean, Gary Wills, Reverend Charles Curran, Mary McAleese, the former president of Ireland. But nothing in this statement challenges the Catholic Church's discrimination against LGBTQ people with its heinous theology and their theologians.
I am speechless. You know, it's an institution that shows no signs of crumbling, even as we pick away at little parts of it.
All right. The U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services announced that children of same-sex couples who are born overseas via a surrogate or other assisted reproductive technology are now eligible for U.S. citizenship.
Well, don't they have to have some DNA relationship with one of the parents, one of the adoptive parents, or you know?
This week on Gay USA, we will answer that question. I don't know.
I think they have to have some biological connection. And as I read the story, I thought, wait a minute, what about if you just adopt overseas? Is that not, as a same-sex couple, can you not?
They're updating it. And the census is trying to update things. Their household pulse survey now includes questions about sexual orientation and gender identity for the first time. But they're asking things like sex at birth and current gender identity, and then gay or lesbian, straight, bisexual, or something else, or do you not know? And they asked, but they've already released some data today. They found higher rates of food and economic insecurity among LGBTQ Americans over non-LGBTQ. But anyway,
well, there's a trans activist who objects to the way they have configured these questions as obsolete and insulting, and suggests that the way you should do it is, what is your gender identity or gender identification? And then ask, do you consider yourself trans or, you know, ask more questions that probe a little deeper after that, but start with, what is your current gender identity?
And of course, many transgender people just want to be known as the gender that they are, and that's it. So it's
exactly,
you know. Now the current census numbers are being sent this month to the states to work at to do redistricting. And, you know, we haven't been able to pass the voting rights bills that would protect against gerrymandering, but the bill is still alive. The filibuster has to be modified. Now, that reform, of course, you always hear it's being blocked by Manchin and Sinema, and that's true. But also Coons and Carper, senators from Delaware. So Joe Biden, you got to get in the game here if we're going to do this thing. There are paths to victory, but
You know, Biden's been very deliberate, you know, evenly paced going along with all of this stuff. And we've all been skeptical about a number of these issues as he's gone along. And the latest has been this infrastructure stuff. And I think we all thought that was going down the drain. But step by step by step, he has gotten to a place where not only is the first trillion approved in the Senate, but now they're on the road to approving the $3.2 trillion more, which is going to go give it a real shot in the House, which is the real problem area at the moment.
Give them credit on what?
I've given up being so initially skeptical of these issues. I have a little more faith that patience will get us to some of these.
All right. One of my favorite stories of the week, the American Medical Association.
Yes.
They just outright recommended removing sex entirely from birth certificates. They said it would be a valuable first step in addressing the inequities trans and intersex people.
Wait a minute. Not removing it entirely. Removing it as a legal designation. So what they've suggested is that it still be recorded, but not be public information, not be used by the, you know, as a legal entity by public organizations.
So is it still on your birth certificate?
Yes, but in a more concealed way, not available as public information.
Invisible ink? I mean, sometimes you have to produce your birth certificate.
Code. Stick figures.
Don't get me started on that.
But what they said, which was, I agree with you, is just fascinating and wonderful. They said gender is a spectrum. Amazing and admirable.
Right. All right. Let's go to Brooklyn.
Okay. I was going to go to Charlotte, North Carolina, but
go ahead.
Well, Charlotte, North Carolina, the city council has just expanded its non-discrimination law, adding sexual orientation, gender identity, pregnancy, family status, and natural hairstyles as protected categories from discrimination in employment.
Now, they tried to do this 5 years ago. So the Republicans in the legislature, and they had a Republican governor, passed a law saying you can't do anything. It goes beyond what we cover in the state. So now they have. Other cities have done this as well. Even when Governor Cooper, the Democrat, managed to get rid of the bad trans bathroom stuff, they still had this thing, you can't pass civil rights laws. That expired in 2020. And so cities across the state are doing this.
In Texas, however, things are still bleak and getting bleaker. Governor Abbott is now for the third time asking the legislature to pass a no trans youth in sports bill. He failed in the regular legislature session. Then he tried it again in the special session, but all the Democrats walked out, so that was canceled. And now they're back in a second special session, and it's again on the agenda. The really heartbreaking reports are of how even this discussion is traumatizing trans kids. Just viciously, and right-wing activists are showing up at hearings to assault and torture trans kids who are there to lobby or to testify, and it's a hideous, hideous situation in Texas.
Well, better news in Charleston, West Virginia, where they banned conversion therapy.
Yes, that is better news, and mixed news in Brooklyn. Go ahead with that.
All right. So we have a picture of it. Fifth graders working with an outside group that they got a grant made a mural for the cafeteria that included Black Lives Matter and a quote there on the left from Audre Lorde, the lesbian poet, once the poet laureate of New York State. "Your silence will not protect you," her famous quote. It was taken down at PS 295. A principal, Frank Giordano, of another school in the complex, said he felt attacked by the Lord quote. The district superintendent, Anita Scott, blasted the artwork as not welcoming and inclusive enough. So the students were heartbroken. The Department of Education investigated. And by the way, the money for this was put up by Councilmember Carlos Menchaca, out gay. But now they're going to restore it somehow. The fifth graders are going to be in the sixth grade, so I don't know how quite they're going to do it. But wow. Well, you know, part of the reason it's being restored is because this controversy got on the front page of the Daily News.
Well, the idea that principal said your silence will not protect you made him feel attacked is just that's my favorite story of the week.
Yeah.
What is he scared of?
Yeah, exactly.
What is his problem? anyway, and a similar controversy in the same general neighborhood, there's a sort of fancy butcher shop called Fleischer's in, I think there are several of them in the New York and Connecticut area. And they had put some Black Lives Matter and Pride signs in the window of the shop. Well, one of the investors called up the CEO and said,
I feel attacked by that.
Yes, exactly. So the CEO gets in his car and rushes around to every one of the butcher shops, taking down the signs.
I mean, this is something that's supposed to appeal to, you know, latte liberals, you know, these butcher shops.
Yeah, well, investors are not necessarily latte liberals.
Right.
So he did feel personally attacked. So the CEO rushes around and does this. And then the staff quits. They all walk out and said, we're over this. They had a very diverse staff racially and bisexual orientation, too. And so after the staff quit and refused to come back, the CEO apologized. The investor apologized. They put the signs back up. The staff is still out. They haven't decided to forgive
them. Well, I mean, this is what the Human Rights Campaign is going through. They have a very staff with a lot of standards about all these issues. They actually care about them. And that's why they're raising these things with Alfonso.
Well, it's like Heritage of Pride putting together a diverse board after complaints by everybody. And then the diverse board does diverse things. And the membership goes, wait a minute. We just wanted a superficial signal. We didn't want you to do anything.
All right. All right. So sort of a good news, bad news, good news story. Smith College alums have rallied behind a student, Chera Harder, whose parents cut her off because she's gay. They'd already sent her to conversion therapy. She'd had enough of that. So when she, you know, said, I am gay, they cut her off. And the alumni raised most of her tuition money in Vietnam, where she had lived prior. She had to meet weekly with a Christian woman who asked her to pray to break the chains of homosexuality. Wow.
Well, she was raised in Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand. She said, she is 18. It's only a couple of years ago that she says she first heard the word gay. So
that's all it takes.
Yeah, I guess so. And in New York City, Danae or Danny Sargent, non-binary, got in a tussle yelling at cops for harassing black people, ended up being tased in the crotch by the cops who were annoyed that they were objecting to the harassment, arrested for nothing. This is what happens in New York. If you look sideways at the cops, they're likely to haul you in. But Danae has gotten a $35,000 settlement from the NYPD for this harassment and false arrest.
It was the day of his birthday party 2 years ago. Let's go to the cover of Vogue.
There, not his.
There, sorry.
Non-binary.
Thank you. Let's go to the cover of Vogue magazine.
Okay.
And let's make sure I get the pronouns right here. This is the first trans model on the cover. That's Ariel Nicholson there in green. She is featured next to a group of fellow fashion superstars who are described as the models who make the moment in an issue celebrating diversity and representation. It's worth saying who these other women are. A 26-year-old Dutch-Palestinian supermodel, Bella Hadid, who's been attacked online over her support for Palestinians in Gaza. Precious Lee, one of the few plus-size black women ever to appear on the cover of Vogue. Yumi Nu, the first plus-size Asian-American model to score a Vogue cover, as well as Madonna's eldest daughter, Lola Leon, who has been targeted by social media haters for not shaving her armpits.
She's on the right there. Okay. In Michigan, the Court of Appeals reversed itself. It had originally ruled that an anti-trans assault could not be prosecuted under the state's Ethnic Intimidation Act. But after the Supreme Court Bostock decision that said trans people are covered under sex discrimination rules, that same court went back and said, nope, it's all different now. And now we feel that the Ethnic Intimidation Act includes anti-trans assaults and discrimination. So that's a terrific thing.
Yeah. In Puerto Rico, three men were charged with federal hate crimes after using a paintball gun to shoot at a trans woman, Alexa Negron Luciano, who was later found dead. Two are being charged with obstruction of justice. No one has been charged with the murder.
She was shot dead later. We don't know whether these guys had anything to do with it or not. And in Cleveland, Ohio, another murder of a trans woman, Tierra Marie Lewis, 30 years old, murdered in June, shot dead. They've indicted a guy for this. But it took a month for the story to come out because she was totally misgendered by the criminal justice system, by the press, by her family. This is just routine that people are misgendered.
And Lewis had been trying to break away from sex work and recover from addiction. Apparently experienced blatant transphobia in shelters. So a tough fight.
And in Dallas, Texas, a trans woman was shot dead at a homeless encampment. Not even identified yet. They're still working on that. But this is, you know, we're now in the mid-30s of trans women killed in the United States this year that we know about.
In Arizona, outstate Senator Tony Navarrete, 35, was arrested on felony charges related to sex with an underage boy and attempted sex with another. His last, the LGBT caucus is calling on him to resign. His 16-year-old accuser says the abuse started when he was 13.
And no case is too old, evidently, to be brought up again. In Newport, Rhode Island, cops have reopened the case of heiress and philanthropist Doris Duke murdering her gay companion, Eduardo Tirella.
Yep. This happened in 1966, but a witness has come forward who was 13 and delivering papers at the time. And when he wanted to tell the police what happened, his father threw him up against the wall saying, "Don't you know who Doris Duke is? We'll be killed. You'll be killed. Seriously." And that's why he stayed silent for all these years. And the police have just reopened the case. Some other historical note from Colonial Williamsburg. They have a gender and sexuality diversity committee, and they've uncovered some colonial LGBT history. A landowning woman's request to marry another woman who worked at her post office was denied. So the woman then showed up dressed as a man with short hair and got the marriage approved. It's lucky that Kim Davis wasn't on the desk that day. They've also uncovered evidence of trans folks. A court ruled one was a man and a woman back then. The story did not get into the prosecutions for homosexuality. The penalty then was still death.
All right, well, let's move on to the Olympics, and we'll get to some other history.
This is fun, folks. But what a great week for LGBTQ athletes.
So the current count is that there were at least 182 out LGBTQ participants, athletes at the Olympics. That would have made them a bigger team, of course, than I think almost any other country. I don't know the final counts on the U.S. or China or Russia, but so there were a lot of them, but 55 of them, 30%, won medals. And that's 32 medals. They're referring to them as Team LGBTQ, which I think is cute.
So you're talking about 11 gold, 12 silver, and 9 bronze.
And those medals would have put them at number 11 in the country count of, you know, what, 80-some countries or something. They're ahead of Canada in the medal count and just after France, or the other way around. I think that's it. So we thought we'd run you through. We've been noting some of them in the last couple of weeks, and as the games have now closed, we thought we'd run through some highlights of a diverse group from around the world.
Why don't we do what we did last week where, Rich, you just throw up the picture and we'll tell you who it is. Okay, that's Emma Twigg, won gold in single sculls in rowing of New Zealand, finished fourth in the last two Olympics, and broke through in Tokyo.
So this is actually, she's from New Zealand. Wait a second, I got another. She's from New Zealand. This is her fourth game she's competed in. She says that it's only after she came out, got married, and achieved, you know, happiness that she finally first won a medal.
And we've been telling you about the non-binary soccer star Quinn making history as their Canadian team won gold. The team has four other lesbian team members.
Soccer. This is the Quinn was on the team that beat the U.S. in the semis and has now won gold on the Canadian women's soccer team.
Now you're showing us the U.S. soccer team, right?
Yes.
Led by Megan Rapinoe, won bronze. Trump was rooting against them because they're too woke. And three other lesbians are on the team, Tierna Davidson, Adriana French, and Kelly O'Hara. They beat Australia 4-3. And they were
And they were saying that, you know, this bronze medal was actually a huge triumph for them that they were very, very happy about.
Okay.
So that's good.
Well, now we're back to the lesbian Filipino boxer, Nesty Paticio, won silver. Dedicated the medal to the LGBTQ community, was very upset at having not won the gold, and that's what you're seeing there. But still an enormous achievement, and we'll be back next time.
And says about dedicating it to the LGBTQ community, let's go, fight. So a very assertive support.
This is for real because this gets an enormous amount of news coverage back home, and it does help advance the movement. Who you got next, Rich? Okay, Brazil's marathon swimmer, Ana Marcela Cunha, won the gold, won by less than 1 second, her first world or Olympic title.
Next, Tom Daley back. He won you may remember he won the gold in the pairs diving, synchronized diving. Now he's won the bronze on his own in the 10-meter platform diving. So he's walked away with, and this is what, his fourth Olympics or something.
Yep. He's been doing it since he was 14. Yeah. He was asked at the press conference about the social media abuse of LGBTQ athletes at the games. And he said, look, there are 10 countries here at these games where being LGBT is punishable by death. I feel extremely lucky to be representing Team Great Britain, to be able to stand on a diving board as myself with a husband and a son and not worry about any ramifications. History shows us that society has been dictated from the straight white male experience. And he argued for coming together around issues of gender, race, religion, and sexual orientation. Use all those different points of view and make the world a better place.
And then he became the darling of the games with his other activity, which is knitting and crocheting. And he.
So I finished the jumper and here we are. Very bright right now. This says Tokyo. We've got GBR. We've got Union Jack and Team GB. Thoughts and opinions, please, but be nice.
He makes all those himself. He's and he's very articulate about all these issues. So more power to him.
He's a great knitter. I love that sweater.
And the thing he was making last week was for a dog.
Yes.
That we showed you.
Yeah.
All right.
Here now, from the Netherlands is the 4x400 men's relay team. And on the left there is Ramsey Angela, who is out, and they won the silver medal.
Okay. And then we've got the USA softball team. They took silver, losing to Japan 2-0 in the gold medal match. You have Ali Carter, Amanda Chidester, Hailey McElhenney. They're out. Pretty upset at the loss. The Olympics, by the way, is ditching softball until at least 2028, which is also kind of upsetting.
And then basketball. So the U.S. women's basketball team, I don't think has ever lost the gold medal.
And well, they wanted have this, these two, it's their fifth gold medal.
Yeah.
Diana Taurasi and
Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird.
Right.
Two out members of the team. They won the gold.
And while Bird was playing, NBC interviewed her wife, Megan Rapinoe, about what she was feeling watching her play. And she got to talk about how much she loved her.
And then she showed how much she loved her. When the game was done, there they are kissing in front of the world as the U.S. women win the gold in the basketball.
I hope these images go out to all the world.
Oh, I think they have.
Then we've got Kelly Harrington of Ireland, 31 years old, won gold in boxing lightweight final versus Brazil's Beatriz Ferreira. Big win for Ireland and us.
And Venezuela's Yulimar Rojas, she won the gold in the triple jump, setting a world record.
Demolished the record that had stood for 26 years. And then there's this wonderful picture of the handball team from Team France, which won. That's out Amandine Lenaud of France here getting a kiss from her teammate, Cléopâtre Darlieu. They won gold. And they have another lesbian member on the team named Alexandra Lacrabère.
But a couple of more controversial things. This is Gong Li Zhao from China, who won gold in the shot put. She was raked over the coals by the Chinese press at the press conference, who went after her for being a manly woman, asking whether she was really a man, asking whether she was going to get married and have a husband and kids soon. They just would not get off her gender identity through this whole
This is a big thing in China, sex roles. And the reporter said, so you did this for the sake of the shot put, but moving forward, can you be yourself? And she said, oh, maybe I'll lose weight and get married and have kids. The path one must walk in life. That was kind of depressing.
Different countries at different stages. And this is Namibia's Christine Mboma, who won silver in the 200 meters. Now, she's one of the ones who was tested with too high by Olympic standards, testosterone, natural testosterone. So she was barred from the middle distance events, 400 meters to, I think, a mile. So she opted to go ahead and run in a shorter distance event, and she won the silver. But she's still angry about having to do this and being restricted. Meanwhile, someone from Poland is complaining that she was allowed to race at all. So all that business about women with testosterone levels outside the acceptable limits is still continuing.
And another great story, we've talked about it a little bit in the past, but it was amplified this week, was, we don't have a picture of him, but Team USA diver Jordan Windle, adopted from Cambodia by his gay dad, Jerry, here, and mentored by Greg Louganis. He got to the 10-meter final in diving and finished ninth, but constantly gave credit to his gay father for his success.
And a not so happy story. Next year, the Gay Games are going to be held in Hong Kong, which is, you know, is under siege at the moment by these Chinese dictators. And Taiwan has announced it will not attend the Hong Kong Gay Games because they're afraid of how the Chinese will treat them, because China does not recognize Taiwan as a separate country. They see the Taiwan as part of China. In fact, Taiwan competes in the Olympics as Taipei, not as Taiwan. And so they are afraid to go to Hong Kong, and they will not be going to. And Taiwan, of course, is the most pro-LGBTQ country in Southeast Asia, is the only one that has marriage equality as a legal situation. And they will not show up at the Gay Games in Hong Kong.
They are wise not to go. Other international news. London, you know, we told you they had reclaimed Pride. Well, now the traditional Pride, which was to take place in September, was canceled. Peter Tatchell, the activist there, suspects because the sponsors are pulling out in the wake of damaging allegations of racism and bullying on the board of the regular Pride. He also complained about the limit to 30,000 people. And you had to pay to attend that Pride.
You have to pay to, you mean as a spectator?
Yeah, as a participant in the march. Or actually, if you want to be part of the whole party that's going on down there.
Well, that's true in New York, too, with Heritage of Pride. You know, organizations have to pay to be in the march, and all the parties are high-ticket events. It's all
Reclaim Pride.
Free for everybody. And much cheaper to produce. Almost nothing. All right. Good news from Ghana, where the court there has dismissed the case against 21 LGBT activists who had been arrested. They're having a meeting in a hotel.
Yeah.
And the cops came in and busted them.
Don't celebrate too quick, because the law is pending that's going to arrest all LGBTQ people and anybody who supports them for 10 years in prison. So they're just getting ready for that. Better news in Mexico. In the state of Baja California, marriage equality, constitutional reforms and laws have been published, so gay couples can get married in Tijuana, Mexicali, and other places like that.
Not so good news from Russia, where a lesbian mom and her lesbian daughter and their partners have fled from Russia to Barcelona because they did an ad for a grocery store that thought it was being, you know, very progressive by having all these lesbians in this grocery store ad. Well, they got absolutely hounded and trashed for doing this, and they have now fled from Russia. Now,
and it was a very busy week for the fascist dictator of Hungary, Viktor Orban. He met with Tucker Carlson of Fox News, who was angling to be the fascist leader of the United States, and issued a decree that restricts the sale of children's books with LGBTQ plus specific themes may not be sold within 656 feet of a school or a church. Oh, my God.
Or a child protection institution.
Okay.
However that may be defined.
And in Kazakhstan, 100 people protested it in the city of Aktobe against an event planned by LGBTQ activists. An event. Not a march. They don't want representatives of a movement that propagates values contradicting our traditions and religion to enter the city. The event is just a feminist seminar on the rights of LGBT community. The sponsors will proceed, they say, despite death threats.
Look, we are at a very fascinating tipping point in history between the entire world being like that throughout human history, and us trying to change it going forward. And we're right there on the edge. And we are in a very privileged position in our lives. We live pretty safely here. But there are a lot of people around the world who are still not quite at that tipping point yet.
Fascism is very much on the horizon in the United States.
Well, that too. Combining
very much on the horizon. It could happen as early. You know, the midterms are not looking good, and the presidential election of 2024 because of states. You know,
don't give up yet.
Commentary. I'm not giving up on anything. That's why we're here.
We got rid of Andrew Cuomo. There is hope.
In Australia, Matt Stevenson, the father of a trans daughter, Grace Hyland, there on the left, I believe, right? Grace's best friend, Belle Bambi. When Belle was rejected by her family, Grace posted the paperwork of all this on TikTok saying, "We're sisters now."
Very nice. Very sweet father. And in addition to Williamsburg, Virginia, uncovering LGBTQ history from 200 years ago, Sweden and Finland are digging up, literally digging up history from even farther back. Finland has found some 1,000-year-old grave with someone who they think might have been non-binary. They've somehow diagnosed the bones and clothes and whatever and put this together as possibly a non-binary person. And in Sweden, they're finding clues to Viking LGBTQ history, although they're sort of doing it in a negative. They're finding anti-LGBTQ laws and from that figuring out that there must have been LGBTQ people if they had these laws, and women warriors who they think were sort of trans-ish or non-binary.
They didn't stop executing gay people in Britain until the 1830s.
Well, we have always asserted that there have always throughout, you know, human history and animal history too, been diverse sexual orientations and gender identities. And now we're beginning to get a few clues to that.
In our last 6.5 minutes, how about some AIDS news?
Sure.
So Tori Cooper, the director of community engagement for HRC's Foundation Trans Justice Initiative, will serve on the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS, the first out Black trans woman on the council. It's a little late, but better late than never.
Yes.
Originally formed in 1995 during the first Clinton administration.
And Tori's been an advocate and educator on HIV and AIDS issues for 30 years. She is very, very experienced in the field.
Okay. Gilead is cracking down on fake versions of Biktarvy and Descovy, big AIDS drugs, being sold at U.S. pharmacies, threatening the health of people with HIV. Counterfeiters are selling these to the pharmacies using genuine Gilead bottles. Biktarvy brought in $3.82 billion worldwide in just the first half of this year. So there's a tremendous motivation here to do this. Descovy just $794 million. So they can make a fortune, and they are. The pandemic has also caused disruptions to supply chains and limited the regulatory environment to check on these things.
Okay. Do you have any other AIDS news, or should we move
well,
on?
Well, you know, COVID. I want to say something about COVID. The fact that the CDC is not tracking breakthrough infections is just nuts and endangers us all. They're only noting these breakthrough infections when people are hospitalized or dead. So we don't have the right numbers on these things. And you hear all these health experts quoting old statistics from June or something, and it's not helping. And then the U.S. Conference on AIDS, HIV/AIDS, which is set for December 2nd and 3rd, is moving from an in-person conference to a virtual meeting due to Delta refunds available. We have just 4.5 minutes. I was just going to talk about the one thing about the 40th anniversary of the first gay meeting at Larry Kramer's house when he pulled us all together to hear about what was happening with this disease that nobody understood. And what I learned in writing about it and reading about my old clips and newspapers was we didn't do much in response right away. Our gay papers, other than Larry Mass, who we had on the show, weren't writing about it. The activist community was not active around it. I'm trying to understand why. And I think it's because, well, the CDC issued a report. They seem to be tracking it. You know, we don't have the capacity to do that. But then we learned that if we didn't raise the money and if we didn't do something, nothing was going to happen.
But it did take a while that because people were getting sick and dying in the late 70s and they weren't invisible. They were seen and known. And the CDC report came out in 81 ACT UP wasn't formed till March of 87. GMHC before that, but yeah.
Well, I mean, by 1983, people were responding. You had that big circus benefit for the gay men's health crisis. Yeah. There was more information and stuff out there, but in the beginning, it was slow. Because again, look, they dealt with Legionnaires' disease in 1976, but that was affecting different people.
Yeah, well, that was always the comparison. All right, entertainment news. I want to L Word Generation Q Season 2 has started. It's the same great soap opera. I recommend it. And who should pop up as the girlfriend of one of the power couple who split in the first series? Jennifer Beals and Laurel Holloman. Well, Laurel Holloman is now with Rosie O'Donnell. It's so absurd. But anyway, you can check it out. I also finally caught up on Hulu with Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Yes, there's a lot of talk about the only lesbian movies are these historical dramas. It's a little slow, but it's quite affecting, and I thought it was worth watching, so I would recommend that.
Well, I watch Unforgotten on PBS on Sunday nights, a big lesbian presence in this current issue. DaBaby, who we talked about last week, well, he's taken down his apology that he made.
Well, let's not talk about him anymore.
All right. Let's talk about Batman and Robin, because DC Comics, the third Robin, Tim Drake, has realized he is bisexual when fighting alongside his friend, Bernard Dowd. Bernard asks Tim for a date, and Tim says, yeah, I think I want that.
Finally. I watched a documentary, Jameel and Tim, that is playing at the L.A. Outfest Festival next week, in person on the 15th, virtually on the 16th through the 18th. This is the story of the two guys who were killed by Ed Buck. And I thought I knew this story. I didn't. These guys are fleshed out as full human beings in this documentary. It's really good. You should try to catch it in the virtual airing of it by LA Outfest if you can. I assume it'll show up in other places as we go along. Jameel, that's how it's pronounced, G-E-M-M-E-L, and Tim. I really appreciated the documentary, and I learned a lot. And it really was heartbreaking when you saw their real lives and their families and friends and their whole story.
Yeah, and there's a book out about that Doris Duke murder of her gay companion that is just out as well.
Yeah.
And there's an article about it that I'll include in the email from The Advocate.
All right. So that's it for this week. We assume there will be more news next week, and we will be back here to tell you about it. Someone asked me, do you ever run out of things to talk about? No, not yet. Not in 25 years yet.
Not yet. Thanks for being with us, and we will see you next week. We do have 19 seconds. Sign up for our email list, gayusatv.org. Just go to the website. And the show is always there as well.
Yes. See you next week.